Good evening. Trump's allies flail on in their campaign to undermine the election. Rudy Giuliani blames Venezuelan communists for Trump's second place showing. Georgia on my mind as a runoff decides the Senate. And what's next for Afghanistan? With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Thursday, November 19th. 2020. There's a major coronavirus outbreak aboard a U.S. Navy guided missile destroyer, the USS Michael Murphy, spreading to nearly one quarter of the ship's 300-strong crew. The ship is in port in Hawaii. News of the outbreak comes a day after the U.S. Coast Guard announced the Coast Guard cutter Stratton was forced to return to port after 11 of its crew members tested positive for the virus. There are currently about 25,000 active COVID-19 cases in the military, and another 44,390 have recovered from the virus. And as the coronavirus surges out of control, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention pleaded with Americans not to travel for Thanksgiving or spend the holiday with people from outside their household. In many states, healthcare systems are being squeezed by sick patients filling up beds and medical workers themselves falling ill. The CDC guidance, some of the strongest wording to date, comes as the number of new cases of the disease increased by more than a million over the past week. As hospitals fill up with COVID-19 patients, it becomes more difficult to treat the normal range of cases from broken bones to heart attacks. New York City shut down in-person classes today in the nation's largest school system after the positivity rate surpassed 3%. South Dakota, Iowa, and Wyoming's rate are all averaging above 50%, and the national average is now 10%. But even with the alarming increase, the government remains bitterly divided, with President Donald Trump refusing to concede the election and the General Services Administration refusing to ascertain the results, leaving the country without a transition. President-elect Joe Biden spoke about the impasse and its health effects this afternoon.
Because of the lack of discernment, as they say, that's a fancy word these days, but until the head of the GSA says that we, in fact, our team, this transition team, our team, the senator and I, have, in fact, are the likely winners. And until she does that, we don't have access to all the information that we need to get from all the various agencies. We're not able to deal with everything from testing to guidance to the all-important issue of vaccine distribution, and even more importantly, vaccination plan to actually get vaccinations. We haven't been able to get into Operation Warp Speed, but we will take what we've learned today and build it into our planning. The country is still in a crisis, and there's a dark winter still ahead. Yesterday, America reached another tragic milestone, 250,000 deaths. A quarter of a million people died due to COVID-19. And there are empty chairs and dining room tables were filled just days and weeks ago with loved ones, family, friends, who laughed and talked together. To those families and friends that are left behind, Jill and I send our love and our prayers. We know, like many of you do, how tough it is to find purpose in the memory of a loved one you've just lost.
And that's President-elect Joe Biden. PBS reporter Yamiche Alcindor asked Biden if he planned legal action to break the impasse with the White House.
And what do you say to Americans, especially immigrant Americans, who came to the United States looking for political stability and seeing all the things that the president is doing?
Hang on, I'm on my way. That's what I say to them, not a joke. And what the president's doing now is really it's going to be another incident where he will go down in history as being one of the most irresponsible presidents in American history. It's just out of the, not even within the norm at all. There's questions whether it's even legal. But it's going to be interesting to see who shows up in this call to meet with the leadership. But this is going to, we've won Michigan. It's going to be certified. We're going to end up making clear that they are. They made clear that we won. It's hard to fathom how this man thinks. It's hard to fathom I'm confident he knows he hasn't won and is not going to be able to win, and we're going to be sworn in on January 20th. And I just, but far from me to question his motive, it's just outrageous what he's doing.
But as he ups the things that he's doing, calling officials, is it making you rethink your strategy at all? Is there anything that he would be doing that would make you say, okay, we really have to go to court now? Or are you still watching what he's doing and saying, we can still kind of wait and see what happens?
I'm not going to rule anything out or anything in. But at the moment, the strategy is not changing.
Again, President-elect Joe Biden. Meanwhile, President Trump and his allies are frantically trying to subvert the results of the 2020 election after the GOP representatives on a Detroit area board of elections voted to certify the lopsided Biden win in the reliably Democratic district. Trump called and offered government protection, implying the two had been threatened. Tomorrow, Trump is meeting with Michigan County officials at the White House. His allies have been suing in various states. Most of the suits are thrown out for lack of evidence of fraud or dropped because they have become frivolous. Two large law firms have dropped out of cases, leading Trump's personal lawyer, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, to shoulder the weight. His main argument, a massive conspiracy by Democrats in cahoots with the government of Venezuela to impose communism on America. He made the point as he accused Philadelphia of corruption.
The prize I would have found in this is if Philadelphia hadn't cheated in this election, because for the last 60 years, they've cheated in just about every single election. You could say the same thing about Detroit. Each one of these cities are cities that are controlled by Democrats, which means they can get away with anything they want to do. It means they have a certain degree of control over, certainly control the election board completely. And they control law enforcement, and unfortunately, they have some friendly judges that will issue ridiculously irrational opinions just to come out in their favor.
Another lawyer on the case for Trump is right-wing conspiracy theorist and attorney Sidney Powell. She's been making baseless claims of a communist takeover led by Democrats as well.
What we are really dealing with here and uncovering more by the day is the massive influence of communist money through Venezuela, Cuba, and likely China in the interference with our elections here in the United States. The Dominion voting systems, the Smartmatic technology software, and the software that goes in other computerized voting systems here as well, not just Dominion, were created in Venezuela at the direction of Hugo Chavez to make sure he never lost an election.
And Powell bases her theory on unproven claims that the Dominion company, Dominion Voting Services, provides voting machines that are secretly owned by Venezuela, a fringe idea with no evidence to back it up. But the lack of concrete evidence didn't stop Rudy from claiming ballots were handed out to Democrats, mostly black and brown, in order to allow them to vote multiple times.
We have 17,000 provisional ballots cast in Pittsburgh. Do you know what a provisional ballot is? Provisional ballot usually happens this way, and about 15 of the 17,000 happen this way. You walk in and you say, I'm here to vote today. Oh, Mr. Giuliani, you already voted. I did? I don't remember voting. Oh, yes, you cast an absentee ballot. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. So why does that happen 17,000 times in Pittsburgh? People walked in thinking actually 15,000 to be precise. Why did it happen 15,000 times that people in Pittsburgh walked in to vote and they had already voted according to the Democrat election machine?
Another one of the Trump campaign arguments that GOP poll watchers were kept too far away and couldn't collect evidence of fraudulent mail-in votes. Giuliani made a legal comparison to Joe Pesci playing a lawyer from Brooklyn in the comedy My Cousin Vinny.
Probably the closest they got is from here to the back of that room. We could do like did you all watch My Cousin Vinny? You know the movie? It's one of my favorite law movies because he comes from Brooklyn. And when the nice lady who said she saw, and then he says to her, how many fingers do I got up? And she says, three. Well, she was too far away to see it was only two. These people were further away than my cousin Vinny was from the witness.
Giuliani then slagged early voting by slandering the neighboring city of Camden, New Jersey, again without evidence.
That a lot of people not entitled to vote were going to come in and early vote because you knew that illegal immigrants were going to be allowed to vote. You knew, if you lived in Philadelphia, unless you do not, that's an Italian expression for stupid, unless you're stupid, you knew that a lot of people were coming over from Camden to vote. They do every year. Happens all the time in Philly. It's about as frequent as getting beaten up at a Philadelphia Eagle football game. Happens all the time. All the time. And it's allowed to happen because it is a Democrat, corrupt city.
Rudy then attacked the news media as fake news for refusing to take his claims of unnamed witnesses, too afraid of threats to come forward.
Four affiants here, those are people who give affidavits, report an incident that under any other circumstances would have been on the front page of all your newspapers if it didn't involve the hatred that you have, the irrational, pathological hatred that you have for the president. What they swear to is that at 4:30 in the morning, a truck pulled up to the Detroit Center where they were counting ballots. The people thought it was food, so they all ran to the truck. It wasn't food. It was thousands and thousands of ballots. And the ballots were in garbage cans. They were in paper bags. They were in cardboard boxes. And they were taken into the center. They were put on a number of tables. At that time, they thought all the Republican inspectors had left. All but two had. And an employee of Dominion.
Several reporters asked the obvious question, if massive fraud was occurring and wide-ranging foreign conspiracies to help Democrats, where was the FBI?
We have witnesses who have actually reported.
Where are you, FBI?
And nothing's happened as a result of it.
I don't know where the FBI has been for the last 3 years. I have no idea where the FBI has been for the last 4 years. Explain to me how the FBI concealed a memo in the hand of Brennan to Obama saying that Hillary basically made up the Russian collusion plot. They withheld that for 4 years and cost our country $40 million and two impeachment, one attempted, one actual, and then an acquittal proceeding. I don't know where they've been. I don't know where they were on the hard drive. They got it 10 months ago. There are clear crimes revealed on it. Didn't do anything with that. I don't know where they are now. Our country has had its ballots counted, calculated, and manipulated in a foreign country with a company controlled by friends of an enemy of the United States. What do we have to do to get the FBI to wake up? Maybe we need a new agency to protect us. I have no idea.
And that's President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, speaking today. The hard drive you referred to was a hard drive that Giuliani says he received from a computer repair center that allegedly belonged to Hunter Biden, the son of the president-elect, that contained emails that were claimed to connect him to influence peddling to people in the Ukrainian government. There was nothing really to back it up besides copies of emails. And most news media, except for right-wing news, News One or Newsmax, One News America or Newsmax, were the only ones who covered it. And the New York Post, of course, which broke the story, which was not picked up by most of the other media. Meanwhile, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency issued a press release last week asserting there's no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. CISA Director Christopher Krebs was fired by Trump on November 17th by tweet a few days after that. While election law experts see Trump's gambit as the last dying gasps of his campaign, there is concern that Trump's effort is doing real damage to public faith in the integrity of U.S. U.S. elections. A voting rights expert, Zach Roberts, is an investigator working with Greg Palast. He's currently in Georgia watching the United States Senate election there. He says the conspiracy theory around the company Dominion voting systems traces back to one individual.
So the Dominion conspiracy is actually, it's QAnon adjacent. Dennis Montgomery came up with this whole conspiracy, but it feeds into this whole kind of BS about computer voting being manipulated, the last thing. I mean, like, if people are going to steal votes or steal elections, it happens beforehand. This is what I've seen for decades. What happens is that Democratic votes are stolen, not Republican votes. We very rarely, in the 14 years that I've been covering, basically stolen elections, for lack of a better phrase, it has almost always been Republicans stealing Democratic votes.
What is this, Dominion? Can you break it down for us?
So there's this long-held conspiracy that within people that are very deeply concerned about machine voting, it's actually something that has been through the Bush administration. It's been like a conspiracy that the voting machines are owned by Venezuela and that Hugo Chavez is influencing. Well, Hugo Chavez has been dead for 7 years. And the fact that both Sidney Powell there and Rudy Giuliani were referencing Hugo Chavez in the present tense, stealing this election, is pretty mind-blowingly wild, considering he hasn't had the opportunity since just the second Obama administration to have any influence on elections. And he has never had any influence on American elections in the history of his career.
One of the things that Rudy got really angry about at one point was a reporter who kept saying, "You're losing all your cases." What's been happening with these cases that the Trump administration has been bringing up?
He's been either dropping out of cases. Even Republican judges have been booting his cases because, you know, it's a mix of literally every single kind of legal problem you can have. He can't find anybody that will go on the record saying with proof that they witnessed voter fraud or election fraud, which are, again, two different things. So voter fraud is in me going in and stealing votes. Election fraud is when you have election officials mucking with the ballots. That's something that they kind of, you know, also have a problem interchangeably using. They have been kicked out of court, or they've been basically not being able to even get into the level that they need to be able to present evidence because the judge just looks at what they give, just laughs them right out of court. They keep comparing it to Bush v. Gore, which actually there was thousands of people that had standing to be part of a court case to bring this thing. The Gore campaign had standing because there was questions about not only hanging chads, but also being able to have votes counted properly. Stupidly, the biggest thing that the problem with the Bush v. Gore vote was is that they only picked a handful of counties, which the Supreme Court was the reason why they found for Bush. Very likely, if he had called for a full recount of Florida, he would have been able to have a full recount. And honestly, we probably would have had President Al Gore for at least 4 years. The Trump campaign is picking very specific counties, mostly black counties, where supposedly this mass widespread conspiracy claiming hundreds of thousands of votes being stolen, which is more than anything I've ever seen claimed before on a like a county level, that those supposedly local election administrators are working together with the Joe Biden campaign and also working together with Antifa as well, which is interesting because my experience with Antifa is that a lot of them are anarchists, that a lot of them don't vote, which is an argument that I've actually had with members of Antifa where I'm like, no, at least vote. Like, I know you don't believe in democracy the way that we have it, like, and you want to reform, but like, at least vote.
Right. Where is this going to head? Is he trying to just delay this whole thing so that there's some screw up on December 14th and that it's somehow the Republican governors will step in and give it to Trump?
I've been a perpetual pessimist when it comes to the Trump administration. I always think that they're going to be doing the worst and they're going to get away with the worst. This time around, I think that the number of states that Biden is ahead and Trump is behind and the number of votes that would have to be different is so widespread that the party officials within the Republican Party want to have a party going forward. And if they end up stealing the election for Trump, they won't have a party going forward.
And meanwhile, in Georgia, two Senate seats must be decided by a runoff election on January 5th. Republican incumbents David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler are battling Democratic challengers John Ossoff and Dr. Reverend Raphael Warnock. The outcome will decide which party controls the United States Senate. Currently, it's the GOP. Voting rights expert Zach Roberts, again, he spoke with WBAI from Georgia.
It comes down to Georgia once again, like in 2018, but it comes down to Georgia really because it's the only way that Democrats are basically going to be able to get anything done in the next 4 years. If Dr. Reverend Warnock, we've interviewed him previously about voter suppression in Georgia. He's a person that I respect greatly because he actually cares about this issue, unlike a lot of congressmen. And people talk a good talk about it, but then don't actually do anything about it. But you have Stacey Abrams and Warnock giving something about it. You also have John Ossoff, who also at least he talks a good talk on it. And so you have these two candidates going against Kelly Loeffler, who's a QAnon adjacent QAnon person. And then you have Perdue, who is currently under investigation for any number of different types of fraud when he was doing insider trading and such. Beyond that, it comes down to, like, right now we have this great, all the Democrats and kind of the media is giving great respect to the Secretary of State here for standing up against Trump. But at the same time, he's fighting Greg Palast lawsuits that Greg Palast is filing to try to get people back on the voter rolls that were purged, hundreds of thousands of people that were purged from the voter rolls.
They seem to have been on one side. Now they're on the other side, or are they Trojan horse for the Republicans?
This is the game that a lot of Republicans like to play, is they'll occasionally stand up against Trump. But then at the same time, the media gets kind of hooked on this idea of anybody who stands up on any side against whoever the fascist of the month is, they suddenly become a hero. The entire history of John McCain's career is that supposedly he stood up and saved the ACA when in fact he actually voted the next week for the tax cuts, which also cut funding for the ACA. This is what we're seeing here. And one of the big problems is that we can't get anyone to take and talk critically about the elections here because it has this illusion that if you talk critically about them, it'll end up being, oh, it's just you're feeding into the Rudy Giuliani conspiracy world. And this has kind of always been a history of it. Trump will claim voter fraud. Greg Palast and any journalist covering voter suppression will go, well, actually, yes, the election is stolen, but it's not stolen the way that Trump says it is. Black and brown people are being stopped from voting. They're being pushed into long lines. They're given voter ID. They're all the different chutes and ladders of elections that mostly well-off middle-class white people don't have to deal with. For some reason, every single time I go to a black community in Atlanta or wherever else, I'm watching lines with 200-300 people in them. To me, this is the big story out of Georgia, is that we're going to be convinced that because we love Brad, this is going to be a free and fair election here, and whatever comes out of here is perfectly fine, when in fact it's not.
Voting rights expert Zach Roberts. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Australian special forces allegedly killed 39 unarmed prisoners and civilians in Afghanistan, with senior commandos reportedly forcing junior soldiers to kill defenseless captives in order to blood them for combat. Australia said on Thursday that 19 current and former soldiers will be referred for potential criminal prosecution. Australia has about 1,500 troops remaining in Afghanistan, and the United States, with its own tortured history in the region. Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller announced the withdrawal of about half of its 4,500 troops in the country.
And with great humility and gratitude to those who came before us, I am formally announcing that we will implement President Trump's orders to continue our repositioning of forces from those two countries. By January 15th, 2001, excuse me, I clearly am thinking of where this started in 2001. By January 15th, 2021, our forces, their size in Afghanistan will be 2,500 troops. Our force size in Iraq will also be 2,500 by that same date. This is consistent with our established plans and strategic objectives, supported by the American people, and does not equate to a change in U.S. policy or objectives.
And retired Air Force officer and professor of history William S. Story says the withdrawal of U.S. troops is a good move, but not enough.
It's encouraging in the sense that President Trump didn't surge into Afghanistan to the same extent that President Obama did, you know, back in 2009. But he did embark on a mini surge that failed, just as Obama's did. Unfortunately, what I see is that President Trump, who ran back in 2016 as a candidate and said he was going to put an end to these wasteful wars, didn't put an end to them. He broke that promise. He merely put Afghanistan into a sort of state of low siege, if you will, permanent war simmering off in the distance that we hardly give any thought to. He basically appeased the military-industrial complex. So in that sense, he hasn't really been that much different than any other president who came before him.
Is there any military or strategic or historical rationale for what he's doing?
Difficult to say, Paul. I think part of it could be that Trump is positioning himself for another run in 2024. And he could then say, running, that I kept my promise. I tried the best I could to bring the troops home, assuming what Biden Harris might do. You know, if they don't follow through on that, that gives him a very powerful criticism that he can use against them. I think he's also settling some scores at the Pentagon. I think Trump, in criticizing the wars and saying that we had basically wasted $5 trillion in the lives of almost 7,000 American troops, I think that criticism won him a lot of votes in 2016. He was on the right track. But yet again, once he became president, he hired the usual suspects and kind of talked them out of what he had promised. This is his chance to settle some scores against the generals and those like Mark Esper, who had resisted him in other ways.
You say in your article that the U.S. basically has lost the war.
When we look at these wars that are basically folly, 19 years in Afghanistan, and the country is, and the Taliban is just as strong, if not stronger, than it's ever been, you have to ask yourself why. And it's not like people in Washington are total idiots. It's that their priorities are different from yours and mine. Their priorities are typically domestic politics, and also, to be blunt, profit. The military-industrial complex makes a lot of money building weapons for the war in Afghanistan. We're dropping, under Trump, we're dropping even more bombs and even more missiles than we did under President Obama. So there's always the profit motive. That's a consideration. Peace, or pursuing peace, doesn't seem to be tough, at least in the Washington Beltway definition of the word.
What do you think is going to happen with the Biden administration when they come in? And you have Michelle Flournoy, who's being discussed as the new, as a potential Secretary of Defense, and a woman at that, very different, first time. Do you see any change? Would he reverse what Trump is doing?
Unfortunately, I don't see much change. Biden has already promised that he'll keep defense spending high as Trump, or perhaps even a little bit higher. Michelle Flournoy is definitely an interventionist. She's a globalist. My guess is that they will not end the war in Afghanistan. They will not end the war in Iraq. They will see that as, we still need to keep training Afghan forces, but they're not quite ready yet. We have important bases there, and so on and so forth. I don't see a lot of change.
William S. Story is a retired Air Force officer and professor of history. He's also a senior fellow at the Eisenhower Media Network. And that's some of the news for Thursday, November 19th, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.